This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I don't think we can just step into playoffs and you know, game one, you know, Calgary come to Edmonton and guys just run around, kill each other and haven't played a game in, you know, 2 months. I think, you know, it'll end up the Stockton Heat versus the Bakersfield Condors if that's the case.
Connor McDavid, superstar of all superstars, pouring some cold water on the idea that the NHL can just resume right into the playoffs. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We got 2 hours for you on this Saturday morning. We're with you right up until 12 noon. You can reach us in studio via Twitter. Send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. We want to hear from you. Whatever's on your mind, it can be hockey-related, it can be Tiger King-related, it can be anything you really want to talk about. We're happy to hear from you. You can also reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Pleased to be joined in studio by my colleagues, Ezra Ginsberg and the man that we call Joe Exotic, Ezra Ginsberg.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned King because you've been calling me Timbit King forever. You just ruined my joke.
Well, sorry, I would have, but the problem is he introduced Ezra Ginsberg. And then he introduced the man we call Joe Exotic, Ezra Ginsberg.
Did I do that?
Yeah.
My apologies. That was Dave Minuk.
And it's funny because I was like, usually you introduce me first, but okay. I'm like, all right. That was a quick bypass, Drew.
Sorry, David. I apologize for that. My brain is clearly has clearly melted working from home with my children for the last 10 days. I'm barely able to function and put a sentence together. So, again, my apologies. That's Dave Minuk right across from me. Dave, say good morning.
I'm not a monkey.
You're not a monkey. You're not going to say good morning. Fine. And the man on my right is Ezra Ginsberg, the man we call Joe Exotic.
Yeah, I had that whole joke that I was going to call myself the Timbit King, and yeah, Dave wouldn't even let me get it out. But that series is unbelievable. Drew, I know you finished it,
yeah,
and I know Dave hasn't watched it. Sharni Assor, I know that he's got a couple of episodes left. I've got one episode left. But, I mean, it seems like that series is what everybody is talking about because it really is absurd. Like, the whole idea of playing with a massive 500-pound tiger to me is just ludicrous.
Yeah.
But that whole story, you know, it's called Murder Mayhem and whatever, exotic tigers, but yeah, it's just nuts.
It is a good story. It's on Netflix. It's all the rage in case you're looking for something to watch while we're in the midst of the pandemic again and very little on television unless you want to catch a replay of a 1994 hockey game or something along those lines.
It's Murder Mayhem and Madness, which was also what we were originally going to call Illegal Curve. Can't get it out.
Yeah, you choked on your own joke, though. We knew where you're going. You're not watching it, Dave. What have you been watching?
Yesterday, for example.
Sure.
A little thing called 30 Minutes or Less.
What is that?
It's a movie.
Oh.
One of the classics. I watched That's My Boy the other day.
Were we featured on the poster?
We were not, unfortunately.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just watching a lot of... I actually just watch a lot. Actually, you know what I find? I'm watching a lot of YouTube. A lot of fishing videos.
Fishing videos, really?
Yeah, I watch a lot of fishing videos.
I can see that being serene right now in this time of a lot of nervousness. A lot of people are a little on edge.
I have to give a shout out. There's a couple of really good Manitobans or Northwestern Ontarians that are doing some good things on YouTube, and they're good guys to watch. And when I'm not getting out there, it's good to watch some lake trout fishing, some walleye fishing.
Dave and Bob Azumi are on first name basis.
I was actually more of a Wayne Azumi guy, but okay.
See, I'm not a YouTube video guy. I mean, I know people can fall down that rabbit hole, and I've done once or twice, obviously. But I mean, it's not something that I ever think about doing is immediately flipping on YouTube, unless it's my kids who are wanting to watch, you know, whatever random show.
Well, Drew, you're too busy with your TikTok account.
That's true. My TikTok account is blowing up. I know. I pull those sweatpants down low in my little belly shirt, and I really get the dancing going.
All right. Show's over.
That's an image that can be burned into your skull for the rest of the day now.
Hopefully not.
Let's talk about the NHL and the latest news from the hockey world. There's not a lot of it, of course, because there is no hockey, and it's sort of the same thing being said over and over and over again. But the news this week did come from both the Canadian Hockey League and the Continental Hockey League, and that they both canceled their seasons, just saying, you know, it's clear that we're not going to be able to resume. We, you know, it's sitting here on March the 28th. We're no longer even going to go through the facade of pretending we're going to be able to play hockey anytime soon. So they are pulling the plug. And it's a shame, of course, because the Memorial Cup has been awarded annually every year for, you know, over 100 years. And all of a sudden, it just isn't going to happen this year. I'm shedding less tears for the KHL, but the players in the KHL certainly deserve better. It's unfortunate that, and I think they all understand the reasons why. The NHL announced they delayed the NHL draft. They canceled the award ceremony. I think everybody's really upset about that. And you heard from Connor McDavid in that opening quote that said sort of, we can't just go right into the playoffs because it's not fair to the players, is basically to paraphrase what he's saying. Just how long is the NHL going to keep up this facade? It just seems like they're willing to do anything in their power. They're not following the lead of the other leagues, which are making rational decisions, and instead they're just keeping the players and everybody on these pins and needles of when we might one day be able to maybe start again.
Right, and same thing goes for the NBA, right? Like, the NBA hasn't canceled anything either, right? But obviously we're a hockey show here, boys, so, we're talking about the NHL. But yeah, in regards to the CHL, Drew, it's really unfortunate for teams like the Portland Winterhawks, right? Like the top team in the WHL, or the Winnipeg Ice, who qualified for the playoffs. And it's not just those teams, but, the city of Kelowna, who is going to host the Memorial Cup. And unfortunately, the CHL announced they're not going to be the host of the 2021 Memorial Cup.
Right. So the way it works is it goes in a rotation. It goes from WHL to OHL to QMJHL and then back to WHL for the host team.
That's right. So it's unfortunate for everyone involved, not just a couple of teams, not just half a dozen teams, everybody. And you mentioned the KHL as well. There are many leagues, minor hockey across North America, the world, that has been affected. But yeah, when you talk about, the facade and when is the NHL going to officially decide to pull the plug on the season, you got to think it's at least 3 or 4 weeks away, at least, right? Because we don't know where this is heading. I mean, we've been doing the show now for 3 weeks since the NHL canceled the season. It's gotten worse in many states in the U.S. It's gotten worse in many provinces. Obviously, Manitoba has less cases than, provinces like Ontario, Quebec, BC, but we had our first death here. So it's obviously affecting every province in Canada, albeit differently. So we really don't know how bad this is going to get. It's certainly going to get worse in certain states, certain provinces. It's going to get better in certain countries like Italy and Spain, who've been obviously hit the worst. But I don't know, Drew, is it early May? Is it mid-May where the NHL says, look, we can't salvage a season here? And I agree with, Connor McDavid and some of the other players. You can't just be off for 2 months and then go right into the playoffs. Even if you have a training camp, like let's say it's a week or 2 weeks, I don't think it's fair. And then obviously there are those teams who have played less games, Dave, than other teams. Mm-hmm. And, you talk about the Winnipeg Jets, they wouldn't make the playoffs if the NHL decided to just go directly into the playoffs. But if they do have these play-in games,
based on points percentage.
Based on points percentage, right? If you base it on points, the Jets would actually be in a wild card spot. But, so certain teams definitely wouldn't be happy about it. But at this point, it's not about play-in games or, whether the NHL returns in June or July. It really has to do with where this is going nationally, where this is going internationally. And you have to think right now, the chances that we see a Stanley Cup this year, a Stanley Cup awarded this year, have to be less than 50%.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm under 25% personally. I think it's unlikely. I think the problem is that because so many states are having, like in the U.S., of course, are having different reactions to this COVID situation, that I think, unfortunately, unless you're playing, we were talking about it before the show began, like the idea of neutral site games, I see it being a little bit difficult to think that these gatherings are going to be allowed to increase to over 50 people or whatever it is. I mean, obviously here in Manitoba, as of the 30th, it'll be 10. And we don't know how long that's going to last for. So I'm not so certain. My percentage, to be honest with you, to see it happen is somewhere around 25%. I just don't see it happening. I know the reasons why you'd want to do it. I just don't think it's feasible. I mean, we saw, various players talking about, they've been doing these kind of webcasts talking, to media, and, you're trying to get in, you're getting that sense that players are like, we don't see, it's not as feasible if it's going to be into July and August and then want to kick back into the 2021 season. So I don't know. I find it a little bit difficult to see, but to Ezzie's point, I think if you're not finding out an answer by, sometime in the beginning of May, really, that first week of May, I think it's, it's pretty obvious what the answer is.
Let's say you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, clearly one of the best teams in the league. You're right up there, but likely to be, I mean, depending on what happens, of course, in the playoffs, but nobody would be surprised to see the Lightning make a long run in the playoffs if they were to begin. Why, if you're playing against, you're playing against the Calgary Flames or the Edmonton Oilers in a and Canada's obviously had a much different response to this than Florida and the United States. Why would you be comfortable going to play a game in Florida, given the how terrible their response to this whole thing has been and the their desire to flatten the curve? It's unfair to the players to not to have to go to a different community to play that game, given the different responses. I mean, at this point in time, I know it's probably too early to officially pull the plug, but you know, you said 25%. I would say it's definitely in and around there for my level, and I just think that. I know that the money is the ultimate driver here, and it's so transparent how obvious that is, that the only thing that the owners care about here is salvaging every last dollar that they could possibly get their hands on, despite the ramifications that it might cause by playing these games. But just pull the plug. It's unfair to the players to have to sort of keep them in the state of limbo from now until question mark. Pull the plug next month if there's no resolution here. Get everybody healthy and started up in time for whenever the 2020-2021 season can begin. Keeping players in this limbo where they're sort of training, but they're not really training because they can't train is just, it's unfair to everybody involved, I think.
Right. And the stakes are so high, right? Like, people are losing their lives. Like, that's what matters at this point, right? Like, hockey does not matter at this point. I realize owners, GMs, players, fans, everybody wants hockey to return in May or June or whenever it is, right? Like, everybody wants to see a Stanley Cup awarded. No hockey fan is sitting at home or listening right now saying, no, I don't care if the Stanley Cup is awarded, because the Jets could get into the playoffs and the Jets could go on a Stanley Cup run if you're a Jets fan. Or whether you're a Jets fan or a Lightning fan or an Oilers fan, like, everybody wants hockey to return as soon as possible. But unfortunately, it's not in our hands right now. And when you talk about the Center for Disease Control and Health Canada, I mean, NHL, NBA, this is, these organizations are listening to the experts, the people in the health field. So it's not in their hands either. And I agree with you, Drew. I mean, when you talk about, you know, the millions of dollars that can be made here, that's obviously, you know, one of the big motivations. I don't think it's not necessarily about, you know, the integrity of the Stanley Cup. At this point, you know, you are driven financially, and I understand that because the owners have already lost a bunch of money, but let me tell you something. A lot of people have lost their money. A lot of people have lost their jobs and their lives, right?
So that's why it's so insulting.
You have to keep what's important, you know, really at the forefront. It's not necessarily just about, you know, whether we can salvage a season. And don't get me wrong. I want to see a Stanley Cup awarded. Like, I want to see hockey return. I want to be going to watch the Jets play, you know, in June, hopefully. But right now, it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
I wouldn't, you know, I frankly don't care at this point in time if hockey returns in May or in June.
Well, for our show, it's kind of important.
Well, I know it's important for our show, Dave, but I mean, in terms of the actual health of everybody and the health of the situation, how comfortable would you be going back in, you know, with 15,000 people into a hockey arena anytime soon? I mean, I wouldn't be comfortable. Even, you know, I would. It's not something I'm readily desiring to do at this point in time, given the pandemic.
Like I said, thankfully the decision isn't being made by the NHL. It's being made by, to Ezzie's point, health experts who will determine when it's safe for that sort of thing to occur. So the reality is that it won't happen if it's not safe to do so. If it is safe to do so, then they're going to allow it to be, because I mean, especially in the U.S. where there's like the worry of litigation. I mean, not so much in Canada. They're not going to do anything that's going to cause, you know, damage to their brand and could result in lawsuits and all sorts of issues in that regard. So I think the truth is it really doesn't matter the desires of the owner or the desires of the commissioner or desire of fans, really. What it will be determined by ultimately is by the healthcare professionals who are positioned appropriately to make these types of decisions without a bias, and they may be hockey fans, they may be football fans, they may be baseball fans, but ultimately they're going to do what's good for their communities, what's good for their families, what's good for the, you know, the world in general. And that will be the ultimate decider as to when this stuff can resume. And if, and to your point, Drew, if it's not, you know, within a certain time frame, then I think it's no question. Because to me, especially if you're talking, and Bill Daly's been on repeatedly on various networks talking about how they don't want to impact the integrity of next season. And I'm thinking to myself, like, if you want to talk about integrity, maybe drop next season down 10 games, right? Like, sure. Maybe not play 82 games. But if you're that, if you desire to play 82 games next season and you're trying to get in regular season games this season and the playoffs, obviously those playoffs won't be the same as what we're used to seeing. Again, like I said last week or the week before, it'd be more 1980 style where you have like a, you know, maybe a five game best of five to open. And I think it was Nick Foligno was talking about that too, and I agreed with him. I said, you see a best of seven for the conference final, a best of seven for the Stanley Cup final, I have no problems. I'm saying if that's feasible within this sort of time frame. But again, you know, the CDC said what? No gatherings till May 15th. That was their pronouncement mid-March.
Yeah.
And so we'll have to see if that gets revised or if it gets amended for the worst, then, you know, it's hard to see them proceeding to start again in June or mid-June. You'd have to, like, especially if you can't, if they say by mid-May, it's going to be another 2 weeks or it's going to be another month, what are you going to do? Because the players already said, I think it's at least a week for training camp. Maybe there was even discussion of two. So you're not starting on July 1st.
You pull the plug and you come back next October with a full season, and it's tragic and it's unfortunate, but so be it that there's no Stanley Cup awarded this year, and yeah, the owners aren't going to make as much money and the players are going to get a hit on the escrow side of things as well.
I wouldn't say about that. I think it's important. I mean, I think the reality is it's a lot of money to lose
for
the organizations, for the players. So it's not insignificant, but I think ultimately when you look at it compared to life, I think it's got to be put into perspective.
When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the upcoming NHL expansion draft. We know it's a ways away, but there was an interesting article about it in The Athletic, and we'll give our thoughts on who we think the Jets may or may not protect in the 2020-2021 expansion draft. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
As I mentioned, Fleury might be gone at the deadline. James Neal could be gone at the deadline. Any of these older players could be gone at the deadline, because all it is now is how do we make our team the best possible team it can be in 3 or 4 years, and that is draft picks, trade for young players. So that's all Vegas is going to want.
That was Barry Melrose after the Vegas expansion draft, and like Barry, everybody else seemed to get that wrong, as the Golden Knights, of course, went on that incredible run all the way to the Stanley Cup final before they were defeated by the Washington Capitals. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. The man across from me is Dave Minuk. Ezra Ginsberg is on our right-hand side. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friends, Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, well, normally I would say come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia. Instead, I'm going to say physically distance and wave to Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
I was looking at Frank Zappia's Instagram account. He had some nice things cooking on the grill. So.
He did. I've noticed that. He seems like he's
getting warmer.
He's bunkered down at the lake by the looks of things, and he certainly got that the green egg firing up. And
I'm going to head to the interlake.
Frank had some nice pieces of meat. He had some nice kebabs going. So.
Yeah, and no truth that the meat that he was, his leftover meat was being donated to the zoo in Tiger King.
Oh God! Someone is fixated.
Well, you should watch the show, Dave. It's quite entertaining.
It really is. It really changes you, right? Like it makes you realize that there are these real people out there.
I always knew they existed.
Yeah,
yeah. And I was,
Ezzy, you're one of those people to us.
That's right. You're basically the kind of person, as far as we know, that would stop by a roadside zoo, on a rural highway in Oklahoma.
I would be in the zoo.
That's true. You might be in the zoo. They shaved a baboon.
He washes himself with a rag on a stick.
Let's talk about the expansion draft. Remember what happened with the Jets last time is that Toby Enstrom was willing to waive his no move clause, and then they made the deal where the Golden Knights were going to take Chris Thorburn and leave basically the team
Stanley
alone.
Cup champion Chris Thorburn.
Stanley Cup champion Chris Thorburn, and leave the active roster alone. And in exchange, the Jets and the Golden Knights swapped first round picks, and the Jets threw in a third round pick as well. The Jets, I think, are in a less perilous point if you look at the expansion draft next year. And Kenny Weeb, our good buddy, happy birthday, Ken, happy belated birthday at that. Talked about it for The Athletic and talked about what the Jets situation is like in terms of their blue line and their goaltending and the defensemen. And remember, the rules are it's either 7 forwards, 3 defensemen and a goaltender, mm-hmm. or it's 8 skaters of any variety plus a goalie. Well, clearly the Jets are going to protect Connor Hellebuck. There's no question about that. And you look at the Jets defense now, it's certainly more of a 7-3-1 scenario than it is back then where it was an 8 forward or an 8 skater scenario that they were having to deal with up until Enstrom made that decision. So when you look at the Jets, do you think this expansion draft is really going to be as impactful as it appeared to be with the Vegas Golden Knights expansion draft?
No, I don't. And, you know, Ken Reeb, you mentioned, did a great job with this article. You know, he does a great job with all of his articles. So does Murat. And, you know, he basically comes to the conclusion, Dave, that I know you read the article. Jansen Harkins is the most likely guy. And, you know, I don't have to tell you, you know, how good Harkins has been in a short time with the Jets. And, you know, I've, you know, been a fan of his, you know, since he joined the Jets. And you've been a fan of his, Dave, since he was drafted. And you've been watching him with the Moose more than anybody. And, you know, when everybody started praising Harkins, I was saying, like, Dave Minuk has been on this for the last 2 years and nobody's been talking about Harkins. But, yeah, I mean, there's some pretty obvious players that the Jets are going to protect, right? Like Mark Scheifele, Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor, Ehlers, you know, Morrissey, Hellebuck, all these guys. You know, Sammy Niku is a really interesting one to me. Because
that's the wild card in my books,
right,
also.
And Ken Weeb mentions this in the article, right? Because obviously Sammy Niku, he's a late draft pick, but big things were expected out of Niku this year. And obviously, you know, he found himself with the Moose. He was injured on multiple occasions, Dave. So, you know, I don't think the Jets are, you know, definitely going to lose a top six forward or a top pairing defenseman. And when you talk about guys like Ville Heinola, Dylan Sandberg, these guys don't have to be exposed.
They would all be exempt, absolutely.
So the Jets didn't have that a couple of years ago prior to the Vegas draft. They didn't have these future top four defensemen like Sandberg and Heinola. I guess you could, you know, maybe throw in, you know, Sammy Niku in there. But at that time, Josh Morrissey was already established. And I believe he didn't have to be exposed if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right.
Because I think he was exempt.
He was still finishing his first year.
Right. So you didn't even have to consider that. So you were protecting guys like Dustin Byfuglien and Jacob Trouba. Mm-hmm. Brian Little Tyler Myers. Right. Yeah. So, you know, Brian Little is a very interesting one to me because I think the Jets would love to trade him if they could. Or, you know, if they expose him, you would probably imagine Seattle would rather choose a guy like Jansen Harkins. But, you know, and I'm not knocking Brian Little at all, but if you look at his injuries, you wonder what his future in the NHL is. And I mean that, and I don't like saying that, but you wonder, you know, I'm not saying that he can't come back next year, but you really have to wonder what his future is with the Jets because he has suffered some big time injuries. Like those are the type of injuries that will affect your ability to finish the remaining years on your contract, right? So I think Brian Little is a really interesting one. Sammy Niku is a really interesting one. But when you talk about some of the other players that Weber has on his protected list, I mean, those are no brainers.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think to your point, as I think, Andrew, you said it as well, I think Niku's the wild card, especially because you don't know what's going to happen. I'm assuming the Jets will have Dylan DeMello under contract at that point.
Well, let's assume that, you know, if you're going 7-3-1, which it seems clear, so Pionk and Morrissey, no question.
Of course.
And the Jets are going to have a third defenseman. Everyone assumes they're going to sign a third defenseman this offseason to a multi-year contract, right, that player you would assume would have to end up being protected, i.e. Dylan DeMello.
Well, and Dave makes a good point. I mean, you know, I didn't mention DeMello in my answer there, but, you know, if it's between DeMello and Niku, I'm probably protecting DeMello.
Well, there's no question. If the Jets sign DeMello this offseason, whenever the offseason is, if they sign him to a four-year deal, That means that they think he could be a cornerstone of their defense for the next 4 years. You're not going to leave that guy exposed.
And it's not going to be a high cap hit, Drew. Like, what is he going to make, $3 million a year or something?
Whatever it is. Whatever the number is. That's a guy that you expect to be on your team for the next number of years, so you're going to protect that guy, which leaves Niku exposed, which leaves Poolman exposed. I mean, nobody, you know, Tucker Poolman doesn't really get touched on in this article. He's not flashy, but Poolman is certainly a serviceable, you know,
third pairing defenseman
that a lot of teams might, you know, have some interest in.
If Poolman's available, I could absolutely see Seattle drafting him if that's what they need, right? Because if they're looking at, you know, the Jets roster, and obviously, you know, Ron Francis and his staff, they're already planning for this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, absolutely. If Tucker Poolman's there and you're thinking, wow, he could really round out our top six as our right side defenseman, then yeah, you're talking about Tucker Poolman. But if they envision Jansen Harkins as a solid third liner, like think back to like Vegas with like Cody Eakin, right? Like same thing.
Well, there's also, I mean, you know, if you're assuming your five forwards being protected are the obvious five, Wheeler, Scheifele, Connor, Laine, and Ehlers. I mean, no question about any of those five. Yeah. And then the sixth spot gives to Kopp because again, he's so useful on this team. Yeah. That means that, you know, one of Roslovic or Appleton are going to get that seventh spot, barring some sort of trade between now and then, which means a guy like Mason Appleton, who I think the Jets would protect Roslovic over Appleton right now.
There's no question.
Right. So, I mean, a guy like Mason Appleton, who's got, you know, untapped potential still, and maybe get in a little bit more of a top six opportunity, could blossom as a scoring winger. That maybe that's something Seattle. I'm not sure it's Jansen Harkins over Mason Appleton is what I'm saying from the eyes of the Seattle whatever they're going
to
be.
Well, I think to Ezzie's point, I think it also depends on what the need is at that in that point.
It doesn't happen in a vacuum,
right? So I mean, are they looking at a guy who they want to be a center because Harkins is a center, or do they want a guy who's a winger? Obviously, Appleton's a winger. So, I mean, I think part of it is going to play need. Like, you're going to say, look, or maybe you just take the best player available. You figure you can always trade later. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think it factors in. Jets are going to lose a player, obviously. They're going to lose someone who they don't want to. But, again, I don't think it's as critical as what we saw with the Vegas draft, the expansion draft. But I still think they're going to lose someone they don't want to lose, like a Pullman, a Harkins, or an Appleton.
You know, this is something, this is something to throw out there, guys, and, you know, Kenny obviously, you know, knows the Jets better than anybody, but you wonder, would the Jets maybe pick Jansen Harkins over Andrew Kopp? Because I really like Kopp, but when you talk about Harkins' upside, like, I would say Harkins' offensive upside is higher than Andrew Kopp's. I don't know if you guys would agree with that, but you wonder, because Andrew Kopp would be the one guy that I think you might want to interchange with another player, because as it stands right now, the players we're talking about, Jansen Harkins, Mason Appleton, Adam Lowry is a guy that Kenny mentions in the article we haven't talked a lot about. I mean, Adam Lowry might be a guy that the Seattle franchise looks at and they're saying, wow, this is a big power forward. We could put him out there on the fourth line, but most likely you put Harkins and Appleton above Adam Lowry if you're talking about offensive upside. But yeah. I don't think it's out of the question, guys. You know, like, Harkins has been really good in, you know, what has it been, 30 games this year or whatever? 26 games.
I think it depends on if, you know, let's assume that the Jets would have begun contract extension negotiations with Andrew Kopp at that point in time before the expansion draft, you know, gets underway.
Yep.
And if they think those contract negotiations aren't going well, if they think that Andrew Kopp is just not going to be here on a long-term basis, then maybe they rethink, you know, who they protect. Maybe they, at that point in time, decide that Harkins is more likely to be a long-term member of the team than
Kopp. And that's
what
I'm saying, because you're talking about, you know, an age difference of what, 3 years, right? Harkins is 22, I believe, and then Kopp is what, Dave, 25?
That's correct.
So you're talking about, I mean, I think age does factor in here. And you're talking about, as you mentioned, you know, Kopp's next contract and Harkins' next contract, because he's under contract for at least one more year after this year.
Who, Harkins?
Yeah.
Harkins is an RFA after this season.
Oh, he's got,
and Kopp has 1 year and then would be an RFA. Right. So Kopp, when the expansion draft would happen, Kopp would be an RFA, which, you know, the Jets could theoretically, if he says, you know, I'm only interested in being here for one more year and then I'm out the door. You know,
we'll see what happens. Obviously, like,
again, that's something just, you know, you have to factor into the decision making as well.
All I'm saying is, I don't think it's out of the question that the Jets are looking at Jansen Harkins and they're saying, like, we can't leave this guy exposed.
No, he was a relatively high draft pick for the team, and then he's performed pretty well in limited opportunities. So they think there's still more to be given, and obviously we'll keep an eye on that. Not really a burning issue right now, but it'll be a burning issue this time next year for sure. When we come back, Eric DeHatchick of The Athletic is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can reach us in studio via Twitter. Send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. You can also reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. And of course, our website with the latest news in and around the hockey world is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com, he's a good friend of the program. Our buddy Eric DeHatchick is on the line. Eric, how are you this morning?
Not bad, yeah, not bad. I mean, it's, I think. Yeah, you know, everybody's been talking about finding new normals and new realities, and it occurred to me about midway through last week that I'm kind of adjusting to the new normal, and it doesn't seem like outrageous and weird not to have hockey on, because you know it sounds crazy, and people have always teased me about this for like 40 plus years, but I watch hockey for a living, you know, and people say, no, that's not a job, and I said, well, kind of it is, you know. So, and then of course there's no hockey, and I found my appetite for classic games was very, very low. So it took a little while to sort of wean myself off of my nightly dose of the NHL, and think I'm there now.
There you go. That's yeah, exactly. The new normal, as you say there, Eric. Yesterday they had the representatives or certain representatives from the Pacific Division teams out on that conference call or that video chat. And I thought Connor McDavid had a great quote about, you know, you can't just go right into the playoffs between the Flames and the Oilers because they'll be killing each other and it'll end up being the Condors and the Heat. You know, to that point, you know, how long do you think the NHL can let this go on for before they try and they sort of have to make a decision about the future of this season?
Well, it's a good question, and it's multi-layered because I think that they haven't settled on anything because everything is so fluid. So I think that what they asked their people to do was come up with like half a dozen different ways that we can handle this depending upon what the window is. And so, first of all, there's the possibility of playing, you know, hockey in front of normal arenas like it always was. Or is hockey, when it comes back, going to be a made-for-television special? You know, and I think that, you know, logically, that's the more likely scenario, that if this epidemic crests soon and then, you know, shows sign of declining and if some of the restrictions are eased, I don't think we're going to go full on back into normal society. I think that in the same way that, you know, that measures were incrementally made stricter on the way up, they're going to be incrementally lessened on the way down. So to me, the most logical scenario is that you play the playoffs in front of an empty building. So then, you know, do you do it in the normal places? Like if Calgary's playing Winnipeg, do you play two in Calgary, two in Winnipeg? Do you find a neutral site and stage a de facto World Cup and you bring the playoff teams into Toronto and put them in a hotel? And so all these different scenarios are at play. And so I can't imagine a scenario in which you can play regular season games. You might find ways of scrimmaging. You might find ways of playing exhibition games, but I think they'll have a tournament and they'll just, you know, allow it to unfold. And that's the absolute best case scenario, because, you know, the worst case scenario is that we have seen the end of professional hockey for this season. And the hope is to, you know, get some sort of a, you know, normal schedule up next year. And to be honest with you, as this thing, you know, moves along, that seems to be becoming, in my mind, a more and more likely scenario.
Eric, we wanted to talk about the article that you had up on The Athletic yesterday about media restrictions, and I retweeted it out. I saw that you retweeted it as well, so thank you for that retweet. But it really was a fantastic article, you know, just talking about the current hockey reporting environment. And, you know, you mentioned some of the conference calls that have been taking place with multiple players, and you have a great story in the article about when you were covering the Calgary Flames and, you know, visiting Réjean Lemelin's family home. And obviously we recommend everybody reads this article, but you've written about this before, and the question I wanted to ask you is, why are you optimistic that after the NHL does return, after, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, gets better and the NHL resumes whenever that is, why are you optimistic that the relationship between reporters and players will improve and it'll maybe go back to the way it was, when times were better?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of on the fence because I go back and forth on this because there is a part of me that sees that there's just a greater civility, in terms of people interacting with one another. So I think that one of the points that I was trying to make is that, you know, that a lot of the people that play in the National Hockey League now, you know, live in this sports bubble for 9 months of the year, and everything is taken care of from them. It's amazing. I mean, if you want to, you know, a player can go to the rink in the morning usually, and then someone will make a breakfast for them, and then they'll have a practice, and then someone will make a lunch for them. So, you know, you have the training facilities at the arena. I mean, your whole life is there, and people are doing things for you. So all of a sudden, that has ground to a halt, and professional athletes are in the same boat as the rest rest of us. Now, you know, you could argue, well, you know, they're all very wealthy, and the cages that they're living in are more gilded cages than, you know, than the rank and file human beings who are just in their homes. But I think that they, you know, they are suddenly forced to adapt to things that they don't usually have to deal with. You know, fathers who, you know, the hockey players who are fathers are at home with their children right now. You know, they have to help in terms of the homeschooling. You hope that they're helping. It's not just falling on their wives. And they're just, I think they're just being made aware of there is a world out there, and they don't normally have to inhabit in that world, and they are inhabiting in that world. They are inhabiting that world right now. And I think that when you do something like that, you know, there's a potential for not every player, you know, like some of them are just, are always going to be dumbasses, and that dumbass behavior is going to continue. But I think just becoming more aware of the people around you and what their challenges are, makes me hopeful that some of these guys will have an empathy for the things that we go through. And I didn't tell the story in this article, but as you say, I hit on this once or twice a year, partly because I have so many young people that work at the Athletic with me, and they love hearing those stories, and I don't always want to, you know, go down that nostalgia hole and retell those stories. But we used to have like meetings with the players before the season just to explain why we did what we did. So, you know, I was back and forth on Twitter with Mark Lazarus, and I said, you know, you should, you know, get George Johnson to retell the story about this clear the air luncheon that we had with the Flames players one year, and you know, the relationship wasn't very good. Like everyone seems to think when they read my article, goes, oh, it was this, you know, Pollyanna world. Oh, no, that, you know, like, because the players knew you, you know, they gave you a heck of a lot more than it happens right now. You know, there was a lot of back and forth, and if they were mad about something, they'd tell you, and it was real dialogue, but it was people, it was like families having arguments back and forth. At the end of the day, you worked it out. But this particular story, George Johnson, my former colleague in Calgary, always likes to retell it because it was so funny. So it was George and I, you know, so the two beat writers, and it was Joe Nieuwendyk, Gary Roberts, Al McInnes, and Paul Ranheim. And in the old days, they used to have a restaurant at the Saddle Dome. We went up there for lunch. It was set up, I think, by Rick Skaggs, who was the public relations man at the time, because we were writing for newspapers and we were on deadline and the players were just not cooperating, right? So, you know, we'd be there and you know, you'd see Gary Roberts in the back blow drying his hair. And it drove me crazy because, like, I had like 20 minutes to turn an article around, and I was wasting 10 minutes of it watching Roberts dry his hair. So finally, I said, look, I said, just be in the dressing room, answer our questions, and then you'll have all time in the world to blow dry your hair. Well, Nieuwendyk, Ranheim, and McInnes are practically on the floor laughing. George, who's this old grump, is hilarious. And Roberts is, but he, you know, in, what I realized was he didn't know. Like, no one explained to him why he needed to be present in the dressing room right after the game, because we had these very strict deadlines, and we needed to get them, and we needed to get out of there. And once someone explained it to him, what the reality was, it was like, okay, well, I can do that. Like, it's a small courtesy that you're asking of me, and I can do that. And so, yeah, he became like one of the best interviews in the league. You see him now. Like, he's this charming, approachable guy. No one had bothered to explain to him why things are the way they are. And so, to relate it to today's athlete, and I'm sorry for going on and on, but they get media training right now, and they are taught how to answer certain questions, and they are told that certain questions represent pitfalls. So they have these carefully worded responses, and most of the time it's just, you know, dumbed down hockey cliches that are just, you know, like I can't even listen to it anymore. And so I think that somebody just needs to explain to them what we need. And, you know, going back to your point about the conference calls, you know, like all of a sudden there's a little bit of interaction between the players. They're having fun. You know, Ryan Getzlaf is showing the chicken coop. I mean, these guys have some personality. They just have to let it bubble to the surface. And that is, I guess, where my optimism lies, that you know, that they're realizing that it's a positive thing. It's good for the league. It's good for their brand. It's good for the game if they just let a little bit of their personality come out rather than, you know, what we see now, which is just discouraging.
Eric DeHatchick of The Athletic is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
You know, and Eric, on Tuesday, your article, if you started from scratch, which 32 cities would get NHL teams? I was going to ask you what kind of blowback you get, but I'm looking at the comments.
First of all, okay, so I had a very productive week. I think I posted four stories in about 12,000 words. And the way at The Athletic, like all of our stories have, there's different metrics in terms of how to evaluate them. And I knew that in this particular case, just because I was taking away, you know, basically five teams, that, that there would be a negative reaction in a handful of markets. So I was actually surprised that for the most part, it was more positive than negative. So that was a good thing. So I guess you guys are happy I let Winnipeg stay.
Yes, we appreciate that. You're not public enemy number one over here, but I'm not sure you're allowed to go.
I would never have taken Winnipeg away. And the only Canadian city that's mad at me is Ottawa, because I did take Ottawa away and I gave them to Quebec. I mean, I covered the NHL when the Quebec Nordiques were in there, and the comparison I made was that, I know for a fact that the reason Quebec was denied an expansion team during that round of expansion, because people I think have forgotten that when the NHL decided to solicit expansion applications, you know, a number of years back, they had 16 expressions of interest, but only two formal bids. And if you wanted to put a formal bid in, it cost you $1 million, and you had to, you know, go, you know, jump through hoops for the NHL on multiple levels, because now, of course, they're vetting owners much more closely than they did, you know, 10 and 20 years ago.
The good
and
old days.
They gave Vegas a team, and they turned Quebec down. And, you know, there was a lot of blah, blah, blah about why that was, but ultimately it was because they felt that they asked, you know, even though Quebec was prepared to pay the $500 million U.S., with the current exchange rate, I think it was going to be 700 Canadian, and they just felt that it would be a team that would be drawing on revenue forever to sustain a business model based on, you know, an initial investment of 700. And the example is that, you know, like Winnipeg bought Atlanta for a fraction of that, and they're, you know, they're doing okay, but it's only because they have such a fervent, you know, fan base that has been supporting them from the get go, and you know, they're okay, but they're not doing great. And if Quebec had been able to get into the league on the same terms as Winnipeg, rather than having to pay the bloated expansion fee that they were going to be charged, they would have been fine too. So for me, Quebec was in. Now, Ottawa, I mean, some of these places that I took the teams away from, Phoenix, for example, and Ottawa, you know, there's a part of me that thinks it's just a building issue. You know, all these cities that decide to build the arena on the far outskirts of town, it never works. It never works. Florida, like the Sunrise, Florida is a disaster. Miami was good. You know, Phoenix in Glendale is a disaster. When they were in the downtown arena, they were pretty good. And I think if Ottawa played, you know, in a downtown arena, which, you know, is something that they were hoping that they would get, you know, they might be fine too. But in this particular case, actually, one of the big conclusion that I had was, because this was actually an assignment that was given to me, I thought I would be moving, you know, the franchises around, like, you know, properties on a monopoly board, and it actually made me realize that natural selection has done a pretty good job, that most of the major cities in North America that should have a team do have a team. And as I say, I think I took New Jersey and moved it into Toronto as a second team in Toronto. I put Carolina on probation because they're having a better year, and they do have an interesting, disruptive kind of an owner who's, you know, trying to do business a different way. So I gave him the benefit of the doubt and I'm allowing him to press on for a bit. But if, you know, in my model, if Carolina in 2 years time doesn't work and Ottawa's in Quebec, you know, Ottawa can then bid for Carolina and we can move them there.
Last question for you, Eric. Eric Dehatchik of The Athletic joins us. You mentioned that you were prolific in your writing this week. One of the other articles you wrote with your colleague Craig Custance was about how coaching has changed and you know, behind the bench over the last, last few years at the very least. You know, what is your biggest takeaway regarding your conversation with different coaches about how their jobs has changed over the last little while?
Yeah, well, and you know, I should mention that Paul Maurice was one of the five. So
exactly.
What happened was, and this is a project that Craig and I had been working on, you know, prior to the pause in NHL action, and it was really a response to what we'd seen before Christmas. So, you know, you had Bill Peters step away here because of the allegations about racial slur against Hakeem Olu. Jim Montgomery was fired for cause. You know, there was a lot of blowback over Mike Babcock and some of the motivational things that he had used. And so it was we were trying to go to the you know, basically the most articulate coaches in the NHL in our mind, and just ask them if the events of this year had changed anything in terms of the way they had to operate. And because, you know, there was, when that was like a big story and that was in all of the headlines, there was a lot of discussion about where is the line and is the line changing and how often do you cross the line and how do you have to respond to the fact that, you know, that the old methods of yelling and screaming and, you know, the crazy things that used to go on in the Western Hockey League, you know, kids made to, you know, like leave the building and their equipment and bus home, or, you know, practices after you got back from a game because the coach was mad, or, you know, 7 a.m. practices, you know, those kinds of things, you know, that have been excised from the game over time. And I think that one of, you know, like Paul Maurice kind of said it best, is that, you know, every coach has to evolve because the game evolves. He says, but most of the coaches that I know are good people, and they, you know, they do the right thing and they know what is right. And he said, if anything has changed, it's that, you know, we are far less negative and we, you know, we create a positive environment more and more than we used to. And he said, but that's not a reaction to the events of this year. That's just, you know, an acknowledgement of how the game has changed and how the players have changed and how, you know, the players have support groups now outside of the teams, you know, and so that you have to find a way as a coach to, you know, to get these guys to buy into what we are trying to accomplish as a team, because they're all, you know, individual corporations, you know, with their own advisors and their own support groups, and so, you know, it, you know, so that was one of the biggest changes that Paul articulated. He did a really good job. Todd McClellan was fantastic. Dave King was fantastic. Those are the three coaches that I spoke to, and Craig spoke to Mike Sullivan and John Hines. And so, here's what I would say. I don't come on this show, as you know, very often to promote things. If you care about leadership, if you care about the art of coaching and the evolution of coaching, this is something that I think you should read. And it takes a long time, 5,000 words. The people that have read it, the responses we've got have been universally across the board very positive. It's not for everybody, but it's about parenting. It's about just doing the right thing. I was pretty proud of it. I was happy with the way it turned out, and I'm very pleased that most of the people who took the time to read it, because it's a long read, also liked it quite a bit.
Eric Dehatchik is with TheAthletic.com. We echo his words. It is a fantastic read. All your work always is, Eric, and that's why you're one of our favorites here on the program. Thanks so much for joining us. Be well, be healthy, and we'll talk to you again soon, hopefully with some games to talk about.
I hope you're right, and I hope I'm wrong when it comes to that one.
Yeah.
And Eric, even though we do have time to read all 5,000 words, maybe we'll divide it between the three of us, and we'll each take, you know, 1,600 each or something.
I'm going to make you guys, as penance, read all four of the things that I posted when you get off the air. It'll take up the rest of your day.
As long as there's no big words with multiple syllables, we'll be fine.
Uh-oh.
Thanks, Eric. Be well.
All right. Thanks, guys.
There's Eric Dehatchik of The Athletic joining us. When we come back, we'll touch on some of the NHL awards. I don't think there's going to be much more of a regular season, so we can give out some regular season awards. You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Now for Carlson, back for Kuznetsov, near side for Ovechkin. Slap shot right on, and it's stopped by Hellebuyck. Oh, we've seen him score 701 goals like that almost. And this time denied is Alex Ovechkin by Connor Hellebuyck.
Connor Hellebuyck with a big save on Alex Ovechkin, the likely Vezina Trophy winner. We'll get to that throughout the course of the next little while here on the program. Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Mike Commodore. And then in hour number two, we're going to be joined by Mark Lazarus of The Athletic to talk about the Blackhawks. Let's start as we go through the awards. Let's start with the Hart Trophy.
Sure.
And we know that the Hart Trophy is likely to come down to a battle between guys like Leon Draisaitl, Connor McDavid, you know, maybe Nathan MacKinnon. Who in your mind is the David Pastrnak, of course, yep, of the Boston Bruins? Who in your mind deserves the Hart Trophy? We're assuming that there's not going to be any more regular season games. There's going to be so few regular season games left that it's going to be insignificant for how the awards are handed out.
Yeah, and I don't care what anybody says. Connor Hellebuyck has to be in that conversation. I don't know if he ends up as a finalist for the Hart Trophy, but at the very least, he has to be in the top 10. like at the very least. And that's just my opinion. But the season that he's had, I don't think the Jets are anywhere near a playoff spot if it isn't for Hellebuyck. And that's the definition of the Hart Trophy. Who's the most valuable player? And I know that Scotty Billick, our good friend, he voted for Connor Hellebuyck for the Hart Trophy, and he let everybody know, right? So I think Leon Draisaitl, to me, probably is the winner. Like, if the regular season had finished, he's probably around 125 points, because I think he was at 110 or 111.
It's been so long since I've been
right?
on
NHL. When the season was paused.
It's been so long since I've been on NHL.com, I got to tell you.
But when you consider, guys, how good Leon Draisaitl has been.
He's at 110 right now.
Right, so he would have been close to 125 based on his points per game, right? Mm-hmm. So 125 points is just ridiculous. Like, you're talking about, that's like Sidney Crosby like type of stuff, right? So for me, Draisaitl, if I had a vote, it would probably be for Draisaitl, but I would absolutely put Hellebuyck in the conversation, David Pastrnak in the conversation, just for his goal-scoring prowess. He probably would have been, you know, pretty close to 60 goals, right? He definitely would have been, you know, right around 55. So I think Pastrnak would be in there. And, yeah, Nathan MacKinnon was my preseason pick. And I think maybe because MacKinnon's point totals aren't as high, he's not, you know, around 110, but I think he's around
93.
Yeah, I was going to say around 90. So, I mean, he would have been well over 100 points. So for me, MacKinnon, I would have no problem with him being a finalist. But to me, when you look at the totality of the season for Leon Draisaitl, he's just been dominant all year long.
Let me ask you this, Dave. Mm-hmm. What percentage chance? I mean, I don't disagree with Ezzy that Connor Hellebuyck should be in the conversation.
Yeah.
I don't believe that he will be one of the top, the three finalists for the Hart Trophy.
Sure.
Just because of the nature of the way they've handed out the way the voting on that has gone over the last decade. What percentage chance would you give that he's going to be one of the three finalists for the Hart Trophy?
5.
Okay. That's about as low as I would have said.
Because the problem is, and unfortunately for Connor Hellebuyck, in the last 50 years, there's three goaltenders have won 4 times. Dominic Hasek twice.
Yeah.
Jose Theodore Wintz in 2004, I think, and Carey Price in 2016. So there's been three goaltenders who have won 4 times in the last 50 years. Doesn't happen very often. I mean, I'm completely on board, and we have a little bit of bias here simply because we watch Connor Hellebuyck. We know how, you know, what's the definition again? Player judged most valuable to his team.
Yeah.
Well, there's nobody more valuable to the Winnipeg Jets and getting into the playoffs than Connor Hellebuyck.
You're absolutely right. No argument from me whatsoever. And you go back to that, you know, 2002 season where Jose Theodore won the Hart Trophy, and you look back and the numbers, scoring was so low back then that, you know, he could win it. A goalie could win it because nobody was scoring at that point in the dead puck era of the NHL. We'll do more on the awards on the other side. Mike Commodore up first, and then we'll get to the awards later on in the program as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Good comment coming in on our Twitter feed from JB1960. Says the NHL needs to change the Hart to the MOP, not MVP, most outstanding player, not most valuable player. Then it makes sense for it to be MacKinnon, Draisaitl, etc. If it is supposed to be MVP, then you basically have to imagine where the team would be without that player. Mm-hmm. If this is the criteria, then it is Connor Hellebuyck. Agree wholeheartedly, they do need to change it from MVP to MOP, because you're right, the most valuable player rarely gets their due consideration for this award.
Yeah, and it's a shame, because goalies should be given more love. Like, we talked about Carey Price, Jose Theodore, you know, Dominic Hasek won the Hart Trophy twice. Like, Hellebuyck was having that type of year. I don't know if it's the market. Like, I don't want to use that as an excuse, but I mean, anybody who's watched the Jets this year knows that Hellebuyck has just been otherworldly.
Otherworldly, exactly. So we're trying to get a hold of Mike Commodore, so hopefully he'll be able to join us coming up here on the program momentarily. I should make note that this segment of the show is brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. Remember, their grocery store, if you need to pick up some soup, something, nothing more homey and comforting than some chicken noodle soup right now in this time of COVID-19 epidemic and crisis. Bernstein's Deli is still open for all your grocery shopping needs, prepared foods, whatever you need. Check them out online, bernsteinsdeli.com.
Yeah, I spoke with Aaron yesterday, and he mentioned that they are going to be on Skip the Dishes and DoorDash and Uber Eats starting next week. And as you mentioned, you know, the restaurant, you're not able to dine in, but you can still get delivery. So
support our local businesses. Yep. Absolutely. Go out there.
Your food will be delivered by Ezzy.
Ezzy, it'll have a big bite taken out
you know
of
how
it.
It's supposed to be stapled shut?
Yeah.
Ezzy actually has a stapler in his car, so fear not. Yeah. There may be missed. Exactly. Might get half a sandwich.
That's right. If you order an Illegal Curve sandwich and if Ezzy delivers it, just know you're only going to get maybe half a sandwich at best at that point in time.
Just be kind. Order two.
There you go.
One
give
for yourself,
one to Ezzy.
One for us.
Pay it forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just the right thing to do.
Ask for it to be bagged separately, of course.
Naturally. Ask it to Ezzy not to touch it and you'll be fine. Yeah. But you know, those are the risks you take when Ezzy's involved in anything food related.
He used to be a delivery guy.
He did used to be a delivery guy back in, was that the good old days or the dark old days of your life?
Oh, those were the good old days.
Yeah.
Back used to eat a pizza, deliver a pizza. That was great.
instead of getting paid, you actually just got paid in pizzas.
Exactly.
Yeah,
dough balls.
Dough balls. You just ate the dough ball raw, though. That was the problem. You had no idea what you were doing.
Shout out to Joe Grande at Mona Lisa.
He was in today's free press talking about some of the...
Yeah, my
old stomping grounds.
We ate a lot of dough balls.
There's Sean Asor there. He was also in that menagerie of delivery delivery guys. Those are the off-air stories I think we can tell. I'm not sure we can tell.
That was a long time ago. We're talking like 15 years ago.
And to clarify, those were the glory days.
And you were probably more. It was probably more than 15 years ago. Weren't you like 16 or 17?
No. I was early 20s. Let's just say that Ezzy, I was
he was a late bloomer. He was a late bloomer.
Ezzy, you dropped the pizza off at my house the other day. What are you talking about?
That's true. That's a separate issue altogether. Gas was probably the same price as it is now, though. That's the only difference. I've never seen gas this cheap. I mean, it's crazy. You drive around. I mean, anyways, we don't need to talk about the.
What is this? What is this, like the OPEC show here?
Maybe we're getting a little bit desperate on topics. We could do a show about gas prices and things of that nature. Let's talk about the Vezina Trophy. I guess we talked about the Hart Trophy. We can move to the Vezina.
Well, that
is there
that
any
amount
any no. way that it can't be Connor Hellebuck?
No, it's Hellebuck. I mean, it is. I mean, he's just what he's been able to do. You look at his advanced stats. You look at his numbers. He is the clear leader in the NHL this season for what he's been able to do. And again. For what he's been able to do on a decimated back end. I mean, he's not doing this in front of like a top-rated defensive unit by any stretch of the imagination. So quite often he's been doing a lot of this on his own. So, I mean, I don't think there's really much of a discussion here for me.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Dave. I mean, we're all going to vote for Hellebuck. I think most people are going to vote for Hellebuck.
We don't have a vote.
No,
he means in our own internal Illegal Curve.
In our own ballot awards.
You know, obviously, you know, this is going to be a quick one, and we can move ahead to the next award here, guys. But, I mean, Tuukka Rask deserves a lot of shout-outs here. Because you look at his, you know...
Deserves praise for his performance this year.
929 save percentage. Yeah. He's got 5 shutouts, and I think Hellebuck's at 6, right? Mm-hmm. So he's 1 behind Hellebuck for most shutouts in the league. And, you know, obviously the Bruins are a great defensive team. We know that. He's got a great defense in front of him. And obviously Patrice Bergeron is one of the best defensive centers maybe of all time. So obviously, you know, the Bruins are a top team. But, you know, 2.12 goals against, 929 save percentage. You know, we talked about the shutouts. You know, to me, Rask is probably second. And, you know, when you talk about some other goalies, I think Ben Bishop is probably going to be one of the finalists. And another guy that I think would be getting more discussion for the Vezina and the Calder is Shesterkin, but he only played like 12 games or something, but you know, 10-2, you know, the save percentage is I think right around 925, 930. Mm-hmm. So Shesterkin is a guy that I think if he was around 30 to 40 games, I think his name would be in the Calder and Vezina talk as well.
And I think the big factor for me at least is that Connor Hellebuck's played 58 games. Rask 41 mm-hmm. and Bishop 44. So, I mean, that's a big difference.
Sure.
That's a lot more legwork for Connor Hellebuck than the other guys who, you know, have had a little more, rest and throughout the season. So I think, to me, again, it's Connor Hellebuck.
It's actually what's most entertaining is the Athletic did their voting.
Like 92%.
And Connor Hellebuck got 92.68% of the votes.
Which I think was the most of any of the ones that they had voted for. It was the most clear-cut winner.
It was absolutely by far. Let's move to the Norris Trophy because this one's a lot closer. You have Roman Josi of the Nashville Predators.
Yep. Big fan
you have John Carlson of the Washington Capitals. And, of course, you know, he's there. He's in discussions almost perennially is Victor Hedman of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Yep. To the point of he's almost underappreciated because he plays at such a high level game in, game out, season in, season out. Who gets your Norris Trophy vote, at least your imaginary Norris Trophy vote?
Yeah, anybody that listens to the show knows that I think Seth Jones is the best defenseman in the league, so I would give it to Seth Jones, and that's a little bit off the board, obviously, because he was injured. You know, when the season was canceled, he'd already missed, I don't know what it was, 10 games, 12 games, something like that. But when you're talking about Jones, his offensive numbers just aren't high enough, right? I think he was around 30 points. But for me, it would be Seth Jones. But I think when you're talking about Josi, John Carlson, Victor Hedman, most likely those guys will be the finalists. And I would probably give the edge to Roman Josi. I mean, Yossi has been a top defenseman for the Predators for, what, 10 years now? Longer than that?
And always in the shadow. I mean, this is the first year where he hasn't been in the shadow of either P.K. Subban or before him, Shea Weber, of course. But Roman Yossi has been...
Well, and then also Ryan Suter.
Ryan Suter, too.
And Matthias Ekholm, too. Like, yeah. Ekholm is, to me, a top 20 defenseman in the league as well. So I'd probably give it to Yossi. But, you know, the John Carlson offensive explosion this year, and he's obviously had some good years prior to this year as well, can't be, you know, it looked like he might hit 100 points at one point. So I think Carlson deserves a lot of, you know, Norris consideration, but me personally, I'd probably give it to Yossi. But as I mentioned, I'm going a little bit off the board and picking Seth Jones, but I don't think he has a chance at being a finalist.
Dave, any thoughts on that one?
Well, I mean, it's funny because I had John Carlson at the beginning of the season, no big deal, in the Illegal Curve picks, preseason picks. But I would probably go with Roman Yossi because he has just been like, again, and sometimes a little bit of a bias, right? Because we see a lot more of the Predators than we do of the Capitals.
Sure.
So it's a little bit easier for me to have an appreciation for what Roman Yossi does for his team and just how good Roman Yossi is. And I've been, you know, I tell the story every time, but I remember watching a Hawks Predators game. Don't ask me why I was watching a Hawks Predators game, you know, whatever it was, 5-6 years ago. And I just remember watching this guy and thinking to myself, like, unbelievable what this guy can do. Like, it's just ridiculous. And really, like, I love John Carlson. I think John Carlson's had a fabulous season. I think it's a little tighter. I saw the Athletic one. It was 63% for Yossi, and Carlson was around 24% maybe.
That's exactly right.
I have it a little bit more even than that, but yeah, I'd probably give the edge to Yossi, but I love what Carlson has been able to do this season.
When we come back, we'll do more of our NHL awards. Still to come, Mark Lazarus of The Athletic in Chicago is going to join us. Lots more fun ahead. You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. You can send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest hockey news is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by our good friend, Mike Commodore. Mike, how are you? Good. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem. How are you guys doing? Sorry, I'm a little late here. My bad.
All good, Mike. No worries whatsoever.
It's the first time in a few weeks that I had to set my alarm clock and I forgot to do it.
No worries whatsoever, Mike. We all just appreciate you being able to join us. How are things on your end, given the pandemic and everything else? How's your life changed in the midst of this?
Yeah. Everybody's healthy, parents and girlfriend and brother and everybody and his kids and everything's healthy. So that way everything's cool. It's definitely interesting. I haven't really seen anybody, hung out with anybody, really seen anybody other than maybe one person in the grocery store in about a month. My girlfriend and I went on a Sportsnet trip first off to, long story short, Sportsnet trip to Miami at the end of February, like February 29th to March 4th. And then I flew to Mexico and went to Guadalajara and Tequila, Mexico with my girlfriend from March 4th till March 10th. Side note, if anybody that is interested in tequila at all, like the booze, going to Tequila, Mexico was actually really cool. I highly recommend it. It's where like 80% of the world's tequila comes from. Anyway, so we were there for 6-7 days and then came home and like, we decided to, I was on the radio for a couple days because Mexico wasn't a hot spot. But then we just decided to kind of self-quarantine anyways, right? Because it's like, well, we should be responsible here and it could take 2 weeks for it to show up. And so kind of self-quarantined for 2 weeks. And then just this past Monday, I was in Calgary and I'm like, oh my God, I'm like the golf simulator. I know this is like first world problems here, but you know, the golf simulator's closed. I got nothing to do. I'm like, good God. So a buddy of mine runs a golf course in Oliver, British Columbia. So I'm like, well, I don't think I'm breaking the rules. I self-quarantine. I'm not going to be hanging out with anybody. So I rented a house in Penticton, and we drove in here. But anyway, so I rented it on a Monday. We drove in on a Wednesday. And I think it was on Tuesday night, the golf course had to shut down. So now we're sitting here convicted by ourselves. But yeah, so that's where I'm at. But it's been interesting.
It's for sure. Interesting is a good word to describe it. You know, if you were playing still and the league obviously had this shutdown and nobody, you know, thinks the shutdown wasn't necessary and wasn't a good idea. If you were a player, you know, how difficult is this sort of, This uncertainty you'd be faced in? Obviously, you want to stay in good shape because, you know, the season may or may not resume, but you don't have access to team facilities. How difficult is this on players right now, active players in this state of uncertainty that they're in?
This would be hard. Like, I couldn't. This would be really hard. Like, this is hard for. Like, I mean, and I'm not in great shape by any stretch of the imagination, but I try and keep it together because I like to have the odd cocktail and so on and so forth. Like, just the fact that my gyms are closed, like the gym that I go to is closed and I can't go anywhere to work out, like, it's been hard on me. So if I was still playing, like these guys that are still playing, so all of a sudden on the Tuesday or whatever it was, everything's closed, whatever that was, 2 weeks ago or almost 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So you don't go to the rink. You can't show up to the rink at all. You're not supposed to, like, don't hang out with your teammates at all. You can't have any informal practices. Then all the gyms, like, around town close. So, like, maybe some of these guys are better, more motivated than I am, which is totally possible. But I'm sure there's a lot of them that aren't. A lot of them, I'm sure, just work out because it's like, look, this is what I do for a job. It's not like they really enjoy doing it. Like, when you have no gyms and you have, let's say if you don't have, you know, a lot of these guys aren't going to have like a home gym to work out in. It's like motivating yourself to, like, and you can't go to the rinks. All the rinks are closed around town too. So, like, motivating yourself to, like, get up and run stairs for an hour isn't the easiest thing in the world. And what makes it, like, harder is that, you know, the uncertainty. It's like, well, I'm running these stairs or whatever. Whatever you can do outside, it's not against the rules. It's like, I'm doing this stuff, but it's like, there's a really good chance, like, are we even playing again? So it's like, am I just kind of not wasting my time, but it's kind of wasting my time. Like, what's going on? So, like, the only thing I can compare it to a little bit, and it's not even close to the same thing, but, I mean, there's been nothing like this in our lifetime, would be like the 04, the kind of looming 04, 05 lockout and, you know, working out all summer, knowing that, you know, the season probably wasn't happening. Now, for myself in my career, that was early in my career, and I had nothing to do with the NHLPA. I mean, I didn't really read anything. I was just happy to be around. And so I just thought that whole summer, I'm like, what do you mean, no hockey? I'm like, there's no way that's happening. We're playing. You know, that's just what I thought. I just thought the idea of having no NHL season was, like, preposterous. So I just worked out as normal, and then the season got canceled. But that would be the only kind of thing that I could compare it to. I think it would be very, very, very difficult. And then you mix in, you know, these guys are used to eating a lot, right? When you're skating and playing hockey every day, you're burning a lot of calories. So it's almost like you've been jammed into a potential. And I know it's only 2 weeks in, but, like, if this gets to a month or whatnot, it's like, it's almost like you're jammed into, like, a mini kind of retirement where it's like, hey, better. I know you're younger, and if you're young, you're okay. But if you're, like, you know, late 20s, early 30s or older, it's like, you better watch what you eat, because if you can't do anything, you know, unless you're blessed with great genetics, you're going to start putting on some pounds.
Now, Mike, sticking with that same topic, you know, we don't obviously know when the season is going to restart. It might not restart, but what do you make of the talk of restarting the season maybe, you know, in mid-June, late June, early July? Because like you said, it's almost like these players that are currently playing are in like a mini retirement. Their whole life livelihood has been put on pause. So what do you make of that idea that you could go right into the playoffs, you know, whether that's, like we said, you know, late June, early July, maybe even August, and these players basically just have to turn it up after being off for, you know, 2 months, 3 months, whatever?
Yeah. You know, I've thought about this quite a bit, and we were talking about it a little bit on the radio. I don't know. For me, like, look, I'd like to see somebody get a Stanley Cup, just like everybody else. I love watching playoff hockey. It's my favorite hockey to watch. I like it a lot more than regular season. It's very interesting to me. I'm like everybody. Like, I'm a fan, is what I am. So I want to see things too. But I don't. This is just my personal opinion. I don't know. If they can't get, I'm all for, let's say, and I'm sure people in Winnipeg would like this too, but I'm all for, hey, look, like if this, let's say this goes for another, let's say we get to, I don't know, May 1st, something like that, and okay, maybe we could, the guys can skate or something. I'm all for starting the playoffs right then and there. And you know what? Yes, I know for the teams, you know, for the a team like the Arizona Coyotes, I haven't looked at the standings in a while, but I think they're just out. There's another team in the West. Well, who would be the first? Oh, Vancouver. That's who it is. Look, I know Vancouver, I think, would be out. If, correct me if I'm wrong.
It depends.
I think they would just miss.
Yeah, it depends on if you go by points or points percentage. If you went by points percentage, because not all the teams have played the same number of games, the Jets would actually be out by 0.0001% of a point.
God. The Wild would be
okay. Okay. So, however they do it, let's say they do it. Let's say they do it by the percentage points, because not every team has played. Look, that sucks, Winnipeg. I'm sorry. That's brutal. Like, that's terrible. You just missed the playoffs. But I don't know. Maybe you can come in with some kind of little one game and play in, but I think it's got to be a very minimal, and you got to get the playoffs rolling right then and there. I think if you could get the playoffs some form, and I'm all for, like, adjusting it. Like, okay, maybe we don't do best of seven. Maybe we do the first rounds of best of three. Maybe, you know, whatever. Pick something, depending on the time frame, to try and get it in. Before July 1st, if you could finish before like July 1st, or maybe finish middle of July, maybe at the absolute latest, I think I could get on board with that. Middle of July for me would be pushing it. But I think, like, I don't know, like trying to play out the regular season and then, like, let's say you play some regular season games in June and then the playoffs start in July and it gets into August. I don't know. For me, my personal opinion, I don't really like, and like I said, I know that sucks. That sucks if you just missed the playoffs. That sucks if you've made moves, like you traded away assets and you made moves and now you're all of a sudden your season's cut 10, 12 games short or whatever it is for different teams. Like that's brutal. That sucks if you're the Boston Bruins, you're the best team in the league, or you know, if you're the top four or five teams in the league and you think you have a legitimate shot at the Stanley Cup and all of a sudden that's taken away from you. Look, that sucks, but look, this is a pandemic that we haven't seen anything like this maybe ever or since 1918. Or look, this is life. This is an extraordinary situation. You know, I think there's got to be some kind of date where it's like, look, we just can't do it. I think the worst thing you could do would be try and do something where the playoffs don't end till like August or something like that, and then it's starting to maybe affect. I think that whatever they do, I guess the best way to put it, Daly said this, they need to try and make sure, assuming that this thing calms down here and we're kind of back to normal the next couple months or so, they need to try and make next year's season as regular as they can possibly make it. And if that means sacrificing the end of this year, I think you have to do that. And that, look, I know that sucks. That's a lot of people won't like that. As a player, a lot of players aren't going to like that. Some, you know, the players that are out of the playoffs probably don't mind, but that sucks. But I think that if I were in charge, I think that's what I would do.
And, you know, Mike, that actually was what I wanted to ask you about, was the maintaining the integrity of next season, because not only do they want to keep it 82 games, you know, obviously, and then the regular playoffs. So how do you do that as a player? Because wouldn't you be worried, especially if this is going until August or September, and I know they were talking about pushing it back, then you're making next season, you're condensing it. And I mean, me personally, and I'm not obviously an NHL player, so you could speak to this, but wouldn't that be more likely to lead to injuries when you have that condensed season next season?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, let's say they do something, like I saw the idea floated out, this is probably a week ago now or something like that, where it's like, well, you know, we could have like a, I think it was like July 1st, have like, or like a mini training camp at the end of June. And then anyways, they had it running. Somebody, there was a proposal or some kind of idea out there where basically the cup would be awarded in like middle of September and then quickly do like the draft and quickly do free agency and then ramp, you know, get into the season on November 1st and condense games. And I don't like that. Yeah, if you start jamming too many games in, and then like you just said, like the integrity of next year, and then you know we want to be able to protect the players and protect your stars, and you got star players that are out there playing, you know, playing a lot of minutes, and they're playing, you know, four games every week, or maybe even more than that. Four would probably be the maximum, I would think, but who knows? Yeah, I mean, it, you know, your body wears down, injuries come up, and then next year kind of turns into a bit of a gong show, and it's, I just don't think, I don't know, I think you try and, it's a worldwide pandemic. There's, I mean, what do you do? I think it's just, if you have to write the season off, I think you write the season off and you try to get back to business as normal next year and have a regular season and go from there.
Mike Commodore played in the NHL for, well, how many years did you play for, Mike?
Well, it's a little bit misleading. I got 14 years pro under my belt. They give me credit for 11 years, but that's a little bit misleading because I did play a lot of years in the minors. Some of those years that I got credit for, I was like half and half, but I think they gave me credit for 11 years in the NHL.
Fair enough. 11 years in the NHL, 14 years as a professional hockey player, one of our favorites on the program. Mike, thanks for doing this. Be well, stay well, enjoy Penticton, I guess, despite the golf.
Yeah, just wander around town. Or is it a ghost town in Winnipeg, too, I'm imagining?
Yeah.
I know they don't have that many cases. In, how many cases are in Manitoba? Was it 20?
We just got a snow. It's more than that. We actually just got a spike today. They just announced that we have 25 new cases today. So we're up to, 64, I believe, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's increasing like it is everywhere else.
Yeah. Well, stay safe there in Winnipeg and stay healthy, and hopefully this passes as soon as possible.
Likewise, Mike. Take care. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yep.
When we come back, Mark Lazarus of TheAthletic.com from Chicago is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
25 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program from TheAthletic.com. He covers the Chicago Blackhawks. He's our good friend, Mark Lazarus. Mark, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Gives me something to do.
Yes, exactly. We're all in that stage where it's like, okay, anything that's a little bit different than our regular day-to-day activities is a nice change right now. Things are going okay for you and your family?
Yeah, staying inside, staying safe. Hope everyone's doing the same.
Yes, we definitely are. That's good to hear. You know, Mark, we talked about it last week on the show, and we talked about the Blackhawks announcement that they were going to be bringing back Jeremy Calton, and they're going to be bringing back Stan Bowman, and that John McDonough, of course, the team president, was going to return. If somebody came to you up on the street and said that if Stan Bowman's last name wasn't Bowman, he would no longer be the GM of the Blackhawks, what would you say to that person?
I don't buy that. I think the Blackhawks have graduated past the point where having a Bowman on the masthead matters to them. Maybe 10 years ago, that was a big deal to them, having Scotty as a senior advisor. But, I mean, Stan Bowman, his name is on the cup three times. I mean, it's not like he hasn't accomplished anything. He's the longest-standing employee of the organization, I believe, since like the early 2000s when he was in the analytics department, you know, in the front office, and worked his way up. You can certainly make an argument that Stan Bowman shouldn't have a job by now. I can make that argument. I can also make the argument that he absolutely should have a job right now. But to say that he's got the job only because his last name is Bowman, I think that's a silly narrative, I believe.
You know, Mark, Drew mentioned that we were talking about the Hawks last week, and, you know, a lot of the moves that Stan Bowman has made have been criticized, and we don't have to go through all of them, but he's also made a lot of great moves. And one of the moves that I mentioned was, you know, signing Robin Lehner in the offseason to that 1 year, $5 million contract. But the question I have for you, Mark, is why did they decide to trade him at the deadline? Was it simply that they weren't going to come to terms on a long-term contract? Because it seemed like everything was pointing towards Robin Lehner re-signing with Chicago based on the really good year that he had this year.
I think they would have liked to re-sign Lehner. He's a good fit in that locker room. Everybody liked him. He does well in a veteran locker room with lots of loud guys, because he's a veteran who's pretty loud. He was really well-liked, and he was phenomenal on the ice. But I think they just didn't think they could afford him. They've got very little cap space coming up. Assuming that Seabrook and Vahan and Shaw all come off LTIR in the fall like they're planning to, they have very little cap space, and they've got to re-sign Dominik Kubalík, who scored 30 goals this year, so he's going to cost more than they expected him to cost as a second-year player. They've got to give Dylan Strome his second-year deal. He's going to be worth $3 or $4 million probably over a few years. And Leonard is, you know, he made a lot of noise over the years, over the course of the season, saying, I'm done, you know, taking less and taking short-term deals, one-year deals because of my mental health issues. I've proven I can do this. I want to negotiate on my statistics like everybody else does, and he was absolutely right to say that. If you negotiate on the statistics, he's an $8 million goalie probably, and the Blackhawks simply can't afford that. Leonard's talked a lot on his side about how, you know, he was willing to take less after all and a shorter-term deal, but such a deal was never on the table. I don't know what to believe there. You know, I have no reason to doubt Leonard, but the Blackhawks haven't said anything on their side. But I think what it comes down to it is Corey Crawford played great this year, and you could probably sign him for 2 years at $4 million, as opposed to signing Leonard for 3 years at $7 or $8 million, which means you can't re-sign Dylan Strome or you can't sign Dominik Kubalík. I think it's triage at this point, and this is before the cap. You know, we learned that the cap is probably going to be flat at best because of the cancellation of the season, the looming cancellation of the season. So I think they just didn't think they could make the math work on Leonard. He was too good to be able to afford. I think that's what it came down to.
Yeah, Mark, just one more question on Robin Leonard. The return that Stan Bowman got for Robin Leonard was criticized a little bit. I just wanted to get your opinion on it. It was a 2020 second-round pick, Malcolm Subban, of course, and prospect Slava Demin. Do you think that Bowman got enough for Leonard?
It's hard to say. It's a lot less than they wanted to get, that's for sure. It's hard to trade goalies at the deadline. Most teams aren't willing to take on goalie rentals. You look back in recent years, it doesn't happen very often because it takes goalies longer to adapt to a new system than it does a defenseman or a forward. It's a big risk to take on a goalie like that. And even as good as Leonard was, look where he went. He went to a team that already has Marc-Andre Fleury. You know, Carolina had, you know, was a team that made a lot of sense, but Carolina doesn't really do rentals. They're not really ever in the rental market. I think that there just wasn't much of a market for him as good as he was, so you got what you could out of him. And you look at it now, and hell, it's better to have a second-round pick in Slava Demin than, you know, nothing for the rest of the season, which isn't going to exist. So it wasn't the return. And the same thing with Erik Gustafsson. They did not get what they wanted out of him. They certainly, a year ago, Gustafsson would have gotten a first-round pick coming off a 60-point season. They got a third-rounder for him. It's disappointing, but at some point, you just have to take what you can get. It's less than they wanted. It's less than he's worth. But if there was a better offer on the table, they would have taken it.
You know, Mark, we here in Winnipeg know the contributions that Jonathan Toews makes off the ice in our community. On the ice, obviously, in Chicago, he's done a tremendous amount as the Blackhawks captain. He recently donated $100,000 to COVID-19 response fund in Chicago. So what kind of stuff does he do off the ice in Chicago? And is that kind of par for the course is what you'd expect for Jonathan Toews?
Yeah, I mean, he is everything he's advertised to be. He's a great guy. He's very intelligent. He's very engaged. You know, he had a couple of years there where he was really starting to advocate for, combating climate change, which mm-hmm. is a very rare thing to see a hockey player stand for anything. It's just not the way things are done. But he's also done smaller things. Like he's been very involved in local schools and in inner city schools, trying to teach them urban gardening, how to eat healthy in an urban environment where you can't really, you know, you don't have a garden in the backyard, but you can grow a garden in your house. And he does a lot of things with that and his charity that way. He's very involved. He makes a lot of hospital visits. They don't advertise all of them. He does a lot of things kind of under the radar just because, you know, he understands how fortunate he is and the impact that he can make with the platform he has. He's certainly a credit to Winnipeg. He's a credit to Chicago.
Mark Lazarus of TheAthletic.com is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Mark, a couple times in your previous answers, you alluded to the fact that I guess you think that this season is eventually just going to be canceled. Is that fair? That's your opinion, obviously. And, you know, do you think that the NHL is almost delaying the inevitable and being a little unfair to the players by keeping them in this sort of state of limbo until, or, you know, we maybe get to that point in time?
I mean, it is my opinion, but it's a pretty well-informed opinion. I mean, mm-hmm. if you look at anything and you read anything about anything these days, there's no way you're going to have 20,000 people in a hockey arena again in the next several months. It's just not going to happen. Maybe they figure out a way to have that playoff they're talking about in August and September with 24 teams, and it seems a little far-fetched to me. I love the idea of it. I'd love to see it. I don't want to see the season canceled, but they should cancel the rest of the regular season. I firmly believe that. You have people who need money. That they need their refunds. You have horrible organizations like, what is it, Boston and and is it Buffalo or whatever it is that's, that won't pay their part-time employees until the games are canceled?
Yeah, Boston is the ridiculous. Boston's at the forefront of the being the,
yeah,
the horrible.
Jacobs is just the worst. He's everything that's wrong with billionaires in the world. But that's a separate conversation. But you have a lot of people whose livelihoods are affected by this limbo. Cancel the regular season. If you can make the playoffs work, great. But to, what are you going to have people go back to Detroit to watch the, I mean, you know, pull the Red Wings back from Europe and all over the place to play meaningless hockey? It's ridiculous to think that there's going to be any regular season hockey games. It's a huge financial blow for the league. I understand that. But it is what it is. You can't get around it at this point. Cancel the regular season, and if you can make a playoffs work late in the summer and without putting players at risk, then let's do that. But absolutely, there's no way we're going to see a regular season hockey game played again in 2019-20 season.
Mark, I just wanted to go back to Dylan Strome because you mentioned him earlier, and obviously, you know, he's a pending RFA and he was having a pretty good season, I think you'd agree, and he's played a couple of years now with the Blackhawks. But, you know, how many years do you think Stan Bowman and Blackhawks management are looking at here with Dylan Strome? Is this like a bridge deal type of situation, or could you see Strome getting maybe a 4 or 5 year deal?
I think they're probably going to wind up with a 3 year deal. You know, if you look at the Blackhawks cap situation right now, 3 years from now, Kane comes off the books, Taze comes off the books, the new DeBrincat contract comes off the books, Keith comes off the books. They're almost setting this up like the NBA, where you set it up so that you clear the decks completely and can completely reassess it in one certain offseason. Seabrook is one more year beyond that one. I think that they give Strome the same length of 3 years, and then they kind of figure it out, reassess where they are at that point, and if they, and what they want to give these guys. That seems to be the strategy right now, is that everything comes to a head in the summer of 2023. So I think that's the logical thing. I don't think they're going to give them a 6 year deal because I think it would cost too much. Again, they need to keep that cap hit lower, and it's easier to do that with a short term deal and the promise of a big payoff down the road. So I think he gets a 3 year deal worth, you know, $3.5 or $4 million. His numbers were down a little bit this season. His value is interesting because he's a good player, but he went from being the Blackhawks' second-line center of the future to being probably their third-line center because Kirby Dach is now the second-line center of the future. They had him on the wing for part of the season this year, and he wasn't as effective there, so that hurt his numbers a little bit. So maybe they're able to keep his cap hit a little lower because of that. But he's a good player. He's really young. He's only 22 years old. It feels like he's been around forever, but he's 22 years old. And he's a big part of the future here. But I think that that three-year number, that seems to be the goal here, is to be able to clear the decks in 3 years and reassess everything.
Well, Mark, you mentioned player of the future, and that's who I want to ask about, Kirby Dach. 8 goals, 15 assists in 64 games for the Hawks. Third overall pick in 2019. How would you evaluate his first season in the NHL?
He's great. I mean, and the numbers don't reflect how good this kid is. He's so strong on the puck. He's creative. Every now and then he's brilliant flashes. But look, the offense has got to come. What impressed me is how good he was defensively. He was away from the puck. He's smart. He makes smart decisions. He's good in the corners. He does everything well, and he's only going to get better. He's 18 years old. I mean, he's the only guy in this draft class that really played this year that made any kind of an impact at all. So, you know, it's unfair to compare him to like a Connor McDavid first year or an Austin Matthews first year. But, you know, in a couple of years, this guy's going to be a 30-goal scorer in the league who has an impact both ways. There's a little bit of Jonathan Toews in him, the way that he plays, the strength he has on the puck. He's going to make a Toews or Brandon Saad-like impact on the game for a decade and a half to come.
Last question for you, Mark. Mark Lazarus of The Athletic is our guest on the program. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Second full season behind the bench for Jeremy Colliton. How has his coaching style evolved, if at all, from year one to year two?
It's hard to say. He came in with this promise of shaking up the defensive system, of going more to a man zone, a man defense from the Joel Quenneville zone, and it took so long to adapt to it, and then last offseason, like, well, he'll finally have a training camp to install that, you know, that defense. And then they were horrible in October. And then he kind of took the training wheels off in early November. He just said, screw it. And instead of having four guys down low to protect the house, basically, he decided to let that second winger creep up and then the ease transition. All of a sudden, the Hawks were scoring 4 or 5 goals a game. He's shown a willingness to adapt. It's hard to say. I've watched him coach for 2 years. I don't really know what his system is just yet because the personnel doesn't necessarily fit it, or they haven't played well, or there's been injuries. It's really hard to get a read on what a Jeremy Colliton team is supposed to look like because it's supposed to be better defensively than they are. They were the worst team defensively in the league the last couple of years. But they still have that offensive ability to just score in bunches. I don't know what to make of him just yet. The players seem to like him. The young players in particular really like him. His communication, his laid-back attitude, he's very, very different than Joel Quenneville in a lot of ways. The veteran players seem to have come around on him. There's always been some friction here and there and some lamentations, but for the most part, the team seems on board with what he's selling. It's just a matter of the trend, making it on the ice, because two straight years, they've had very good second halves of the year to make a run at a playoff spot after a horrible start. That's not a recipe for success, but it shows that he's willing to adapt and able to make those adjustments as he goes. The key is doing it at the beginning of the year now instead of waiting until mid-December.
Mark Lazarus covers the Chicago Blackhawks for TheAthletic.com. Mark, thanks for joining us. I have to say it's been refreshing to really just sort of talk about hockey and talk about a hockey team rather than having to talk about COVID-19.
Absolutely. I'm going to go wash my hands now.
Take care, Mark. All the best to you and yours. We'll do it again real soon, hopefully.
You too, guys.
Mark Lazarus of The Athletic joining us from Chicago. When we come back, one final segment this Saturday morning. You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. They're currently closed due to the COVID-19 epidemic, but they're going to return bigger and better than ever. And this is a good opportunity for us to remind you to support local businesses right now. They need your help. If you're in a position where you're able to support a local business, I know that people are struggling. Maybe, you know, you haven't had your income slashed, or maybe you're still getting your full-time regular hours, whatever your case may be. Any help is good help. Do your part. Please support local business. And when Rumors Comedy Club comes back, be sure to support them as well.
Absolutely. And just think, you know, when Rumors does reopen.
Yeah, people are going to need some laughter.
Well, and just think about how good it's going to be, because, you know, the last 2 or 3 weeks have been really tough on all of us.
Sure.
You know, especially people, you know, that have been directly affected by COVID-19. But when you talk about people that have, you know, unfortunately lost their jobs and, you know, still have to pay the bills. So, I mean, it's going to be great when we're able to back, you know, early April, able to go back to Rumors and watch some good stand-up comedy. We need it.
Yeah, hopefully sooner rather than later, but obviously time will tell on that front. I want to give a shout-out to our buddy Scott Billick. You tweeted about this yesterday, Dave. Scott, who we know, of course, typically from the Jets beat and the sports beat for the Winnipeg Sun, is now working on the news beat,
yep.
And he's been covering the daily press conferences. He's tweeting about it right now, and he's just doing a great job.
Yep.
And so I want to give a shout-out to Scott, give a shout-out to all the journalists.
Scotty's a beauty.
Yeah, who are doing a great job. I mean, it's difficult on them to be immersed in the situation.
Well, especially when you want to be covering sports, and now suddenly you're covering a life and death.
Yeah.
You know, and Mike McIntyre talks about that from the Free Press often, because he did crime for so many years, and he goes, you know, it's such a pleasure to go from talking about life and death to sports, because it's, you know, it's a retreat, it's an opportunity for people to get away from their everyday life, and so, you know, when those guys have to switch over, and you know, and Scott's doing it, I think he's doing an exemplary job keeping Manitobans informed as to what's going on in our province.
That's right. So shout out to Scott, shout out to all the journalists, shout out to everybody. I mean, we can't even say enough about the people on the front line of this. I mean,
well, it just seems like everybody's taking it seriously in our province, which I think is the most important thing.
That's right. But the healthcare professionals, the essential service workers, I mean, words fail me to express our immense gratitude for how great of a job
those are
all
the real
doing.
Heroes. Like,
no,
I'd like to think Illegal Curve are the real heroes, but
yeah.
No, I mean,
not.
In all seriousness,
we're the real heroes.
No, I mean, it's the first responders. It's like you said, Drew, the people that are in the trenches right now working in hospitals and essential services and everything like that.
Exactly right. A couple minutes left on the program. Let's still touch on a couple awards that we haven't got to yet. The Calder Trophy voting is a really interesting one, because it looked like it was going to be Cale Makar in very early on in the year. And then, of course, he suffered that injury that sort of derailed his chances. So it does seem to be a two-horse race between Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes of the Canucks.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets your vote?
Well, I'm going to go with Cale Makar because, you know, I just love the way this guy plays. Like, he reminds me of Scott Niedermayer. He's, you know, maybe a little bit different in style than Scotty Niedermayer. But, I mean, this guy is going to be a top defenseman, not only for the Avalanche for the next decade and a half, but you're talking about a guy that, you know, if the NHL does return to the Olympics, like, Makar is going to be top four defenseman at the Olympic level. That's how good this guy is.
Mm-hmm.
He's 21 years old. Like, 50 points or whatever it is, you know, he was well on his way to probably around 60, right, Dave? But, you know, Quinn Hughes was right around there as well. I think he actually had more points than Makar, if I'm not mistaken, or he's close to Makar. So I think, you know, when you're talking about Makar and Hughes, it's going to be neck and neck. But one guy that I really have to go back to is Shesterkin.
He
only played 12 games, but
I know he was great. I mean, we saw him here.
His save percentage, Drew, 932, 10-2.
I know how great he was.
That's sick.
The Rangers are going to go from, you know, however many years of Henrik Lundqvist, what's it been, 15 years of Lundqvist, mm-hmm. you know, straight to the Shesterkin era, and they're going to have top flight goaltending, you know, for the foreseeable future. He's going to be great. He's going to...
That quasi-rebuild is looking pretty good right now.
That quasi-rebuild is looking very good. He's going to... the Knicks might want to take a page out of the Rangers book sometime soon. He's going to be likely a Vezina candidate at some point soon, but not yet for the Calder.
Quickly, Victor Olofsson is another guy that I think if he wasn't injured would get more consideration.
Victor Olofsson, as we talked about him earlier in the year. That's it for the Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to our guests, Mark Lazarus, Mike Commodore, and Eric the Hatchet. In case you missed any of those interviews, in case you missed any of the show, it's available on tsn1290.ca. It's on illegalcurve.com. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us, let us know what you think of the show. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Asor, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.